Napoleon in exile. Time is running out. Once General Savary and Las Casas returned to Napoleon on the frigate sail, Napoleon read the letter and discussed it. The simple, definitive pronouncement in it was that in the present state of affairs, that is, the war between France and England, and the lack of guidance from his superior officer, which of course is Admiral Haddam, was that Captain Maitland would indeed do what was required to prevent Napoleon from sailing on any vessel. This was discouraging, but of course not unexpected. It was also discouraging because there was no information from Captain Maitland regarding Napoleon's passports, nor did Maitland suggest that Napoleon should seek asylum in England or encourage any expectation about Napoleon's position if he were to give himself up. Only as a last resort would Napoleon commit to giving himself up. Still, it was premature to consider acting on Captain Maitland's suggestion. Too many things could develop that would be favorable to Napoleon's plans in the next day or two. First of all, the passports might arrive. Of course, they've been refused. Napoleon just doesn't know it. Second, Admiral Haddam might allow Napoleon to leave. Again, that won't happen either. If all else failed, an escape attempt could still be mounted, and not necessarily from Rochefort. To explore that possibility, Napoleon sent General Lamond to Royan to confer with Captain Baudin of the French warship Badaire about carrying Napoleon to the United States. But on June the 11th, 1815, bad news arrived in the form of Paris newspapers from July the 5th. First of all, Paris had surrendered to the Allied powers, and Louis the 18th had returned to rule. Napoleon went into a rage while his followers responded with more fear than anger. With the king back in power, at any hour might bring orders for their arrest. Bertrand, Savary, Lamond, Montholon, Gourgaud in particular, these men in particular, had reason to dread the king's vengeance. It was inevitable that their names would appear very prominently on any list of traitors. If they should be arrested and tried, they most certainly would be found guilty and executed. Then, shortly after noon, both the HMS Myrmidon and the HMS Bellerophon weighed anchors, moving out of the Paradis d'Antioch. Again, of course, the flood tide is coming in, with the Myrmidon turning south toward the Pertius de Maumasson, and the Bellerophon assuming a position between the lighthouses on the western tip of the Ile de Ré and the Ile d'Orléans. The Bellerophon was joined that evening by the HMS Slaney. This redeployment could indicate that the British ships were expecting reinforcements at any moment. If that were true, Napoleon couldn't expect Admiral Haddam's answer to Bertrand's letter to be positive. To escape the vice tightening on Napoleon, he must act and act at once. Napoleon did not lack men who were eager to help him. Captain Ponce of the Medusa came forward with a daring escape plan. That night, he would sail his frigate out ahead of the sail and surprise the Bellerophon and grapple with her. That would prevent her from pursuing the sail. Ponce believed that he could hold out for 2 hours, by which time the sail would be freely at sea and on her way to the United States. Neither the Myrmidon nor the Slaney could expect to halt or overtake the fast frigate sail. But Napoleon rejected the offer. The next day, another British ship arrived, the HMS Cyrus, and took up position of the Point de Bagin lighthouse on the Ile de Ré. As a result, no matter which of the three possible escape routes Napoleon chose, the balance of ships, men, and guns would weigh heavily against him. If to acknowledge the odds, Napoleon again left the sail for the Ile d'Aix. There he received word that the white flag of the Bourbons had appeared on the towers of La Rochelle on the mainland coast north of the Ile de Ré. It was also true that before sunset, someone had removed the tricolor, or have removed the white flag at La Rochelle and replaced it with the tricolor. But on July the 13th, the Bourbon flag was back up, not just at La Rochelle, but also over parts of the Ile d'Orléans, which only added to Napoleon's entourage's fears. Their enemies were pushing Napoleon and his supporters into an even more impossible position. And still, Napoleon failed to act. Now, this is one of those things, and we've talked about it a little bit as we've gotten to this particular point. He's used to making life and death decisions all the time. But those are frequently soldiers. He has a lot of civilians. He has families here. He has children here. And it's one of those things where you say, okay, well, why doesn't he just get on the ship himself and let the women and children and some of the men go to another location and leave? And his concern is that they're going to get arrested and dealt with by the Bourbons, and it's safer and everything to have everybody together. But how do you go about doing this? Now, as we go further through this decision that Napoleon isn't making, it'll become a little bit more clear, because the HMS Bellerophon that is causing all the problems isn't just any British ship. It has an incredibly long, illustrious line of combat, particularly against the French. It's literally at all of the major battles, the Battle of the Nile, the Battle of Trafalgar, and all other sorts of things. So there's a significant history. If it were just another ship, if it were just a ship perhaps that was a normal frigate or ship of the line that really didn't have much experience, the likelihood that he would have chanced to escape, particularly with the sail, because without a doubt the sail could certainly outrun everybody else, but that's not going to happen. So we'll have to wait and see until next time all the different reasons why he's not making this decision. Now, the sources for this: 50 Days of Napoleon in England by Duhamel, Napoleon After Waterloo by Thornton, and Napoleon St. Helena by Martineau. So I hope you enjoyed that, and I also hope that this Sunday you will come by the new website and see what it looks like. We've been working on this, or my people have been working on this. Amber and David have been working on this a very, very long time. And what started out to be just a regular old project became a massive project. And it's still not quite completely done, but the two sections that are not finished aren't of that much importance. We're redoing the souvenir section, and we're creating a new piece, which is a commemorative poster. It's going to celebrate the 100th CD covers. It's going to have 100 of the CDs that I have produced in the 12 years I've been doing this show that are for sale on one poster size little entity. And we're still working out the details on that, on the sizing of it. We've got it what it looks like, but we're trying to determine whether we want it to be the big size, which is a little bit more expensive, or the little smaller size, which makes the pictures a little harder to see. So we'll have to wait. But anyway, go and check the website out Sunday, certainly Monday, and whatever, and see what's going on. Thank you very much.